This is The Guardian.
Today, the problem with OnlyFans' plan to go mainstream. Just a quick note, there is some discussion of sex and pornography in this episode.
So I can remember the first time that I heard about OnlyFans, which was the bizarre saga of Twitch streamer Belle Dauphine, who has made a name for herself by taunting her fans' desire to see her naked, basically.
Initiating audio effects.
I'm going to be posting my hardcore porn onto my OnlyFans.
And after repeated requests from her fans for her to post on OnlyFans, she did.
Aww. Hello, little doggy. You're so cute.
And it was Safe for Work, a bait and switch behind a paywall. And I remember following it and thinking, what on earth is happening here? What is this site? And is there any way I can explain it to Guardian readers? I followed it from there. This site that was about kind of everything that I found interesting on the internet.
If you've heard of OnlyFans, it's probably as the punchline of a joke about porn and the internet. But essentially, it's a website that allows anyone to charge their followers money to see their pictures, their videos, or to send them direct messages. A kind of after dark version of Instagram that you have to pay for. OnlyFans has radically shaken up the sex industry, and it's reignited debates about porn. Who makes it? Who consumes it? And what effect it has on all of us. But when OnlyFans announced that it was going to ban its creators from posting sexually explicit content, exactly the kind of stuff that made it worth more than $1 billion, that got The Guardian's UK technology editor, Alex Hearn, really interested.
It was about monetizing fandoms and monetizing people's desire to get closer in a very literal way with the people that they follow and listen to and obsess over online. And as time moved on, it also became a story about the power of the large platforms on the internet, about the gatekeepers that control how the web works, and about, you know, efforts to destroy pornography.
A few weeks later, the story got even more interesting. OnlyFans changed its mind. From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, what does the OnlyFans saga tell us about sex, money, and the future of the internet?
I'm Bea Dux. I'm currently a sex worker and I'm an online adult content creator.
So for anybody who doesn't know how OnlyFans works, people sign up and they can subscribe to your page for a fee. And what they're paying for is to unlock your content, which might be pictures or videos, or they can message you directly. So what kind of stuff is being put out there and what is it that you do on it?
So you can be anything from a DJ to a chef, but it mainly is sex workers that have brought OnlyFans to the mainstream. Some of my friends will take the approach of marketing themselves as this model who is happy to create content that is well past what you'd be happy talking about on a podcast. And
okay.
So what I do will be described as softcore porn. I may shoot lingerie and nude content and very flirty and tease content. I'm also the sort of girl that will post about my dog going to the vet and talking about what sort of day I've had and if I'm studying or reading anything cool. So I know that a lot of people do just come to me because they want to see my boobs, but they stick around for the conversation.
I thought you were going to say they stick around for the dogs.
I mean, that's what I do.
How much money do you think, or would you say that you make in a week or on average?
Oh, wow. That's the thing. With sex work, with any portion of sex work, it really does depend. It could be that the football's on, in which case people won't be online as much. It might be that Christmas, where people don't have as much money. On the average week, you could probably make in between anywhere between a few hundred to a few thousand pounds. I have friends within the industry making about £10,000 a week, which is a hell of a lot of money. It really depends on how much effort you're putting in, what sort of content you're making, and what's happening in the world at that time.
So, Alex, where does the OnlyFans story start?
The OnlyFans story starts with the Stokeleys. In 2016, a family from Essex who put together this site, built as a subscription-based social network that could be used to post images that you build your followers to see. There's various levels of cynicism that you can tell this story with, right? One level is that just like Playboy is a gentleman's magazine, OnlyFans has this veneer of respectability, but it was always about porn. The other level of cynicism is that OnlyFans always had this intention to be more than porn.
So we know the Stokeleys had already been running this porn website called Glam Girls. And in the early days of OnlyFans, they individually contacted porn stars and sort of enticed them over to come and build their platform. They ended up selling a majority stake in the site to Leah Radvinsky, who made his name and his fortune from porn webcams. And whatever their intentions, it's fair to say that OnlyFans has made an extraordinary amount of money. It is chasing a $1 billion valuation. It is expecting revenues of $1.2 billion this year. And it says it has 120 million active users. What's made it such a success story?
Some of the answer is that OnlyFans executed well, to use sort of tech speak. The product is good. OnlyFans built a website that works and feels like a very high quality app, but is built on the web, is built on the open web, is free to use. Similarly, they have a payment infrastructure that is quite fluid. It's not, it doesn't feel like you're handing your card details over to a dodgy operator. Mm. They behave and look like a respectable website. And that's really important if you are in the business of trying to get people to pay for porn online, because evidence shows that people are really unwilling to pay for porn online. People don't want to do it out of embarrassment. People don't want to do it out of the fear that they are being ripped off. So building anything that can present itself truthfully as a smooth, easy to use, respectable, reliable site is great. And then the second facet of OnlyFans' success was the pandemic.
A lot more porn.
That's how much pornography nearly one in five Americans say they have watched since the pandemic started, according to preliminary findings from the Kinsey Institute.
2 hours is how much porn the average person reports watching in the last 2 weeks.
3.5 million new subscribers is how many new people signed up for adult content site OnlyFans in March.
OnlyFans began 5 years ago. But it really took off last year during COVID lockdowns, when the number of people posting skyrocketed from 120,000 to more than 1 million worldwide. And there are now 120 million people paying to have a look.
Porn is inherently problematic, and lots of people will see it as harmful for how we view women in the world and believe there are major safeguarding worries for the young women on platforms like OnlyFans. But is there anything going on beyond the pandemic that explains the growth of this model?
We all want to feel like we're friends with the people we speak to online. And that is fundamental to a huge amount of the creative community on the internet. There is this term, parasocial relationships, which means the idea that when you're listening to a podcast or watching a YouTube video or following an influencer on Instagram, you don't think of them as a distant broadcaster who is a voice from on high. You think of them as a friend. And everything about successful creators, successful podcasters, is about inviting you into that space with them, about making you feel like they are talking to you. It's why YouTubers instinctively, it's not a cynical thing, it's why they instinctively open videos by saying, "Hey guys, what's up?"
"Hey guys, what's up?"
And "Hey guys, it's me."
"Hey, hey, hey, it's your favorite time of the week.
How's it going, bros? My name is Peter Pan."
"Hi sisters, James Charles here, and welcome back to my YouTube channel."
Rather than going, "Hello, you are watching the Logan Paul Pranks channel." It's all about building those relationships. What OnlyFans did is it brought that same parasocial dynamic into the world of porn.
"Hello, my name's Paige. It's your girl, Paige."
"Hey, everyone. My name is Anella."
And it was about building the same relationship that you have with people you follow on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, and kind of going, what have you had that veneer of friendship with also access to sexy pictures? Mm. And that's a very powerful force.
And sometimes in some ways be able to dictate those pictures for yourself and feel like you have a very, very direct relationship with a sex worker.
Exactly.
B, how did you get into the sex industry?
I first got into sex work kind of by accident. I was a member of a website called Tumblr, which if you know what it is, you know that it's now completely gone because they banned adult content, which is the way that OnlyFans is going. But I was on there when I was around 16 and I came across a model called Ash Marie, who was a cam girl.
Hi, my name is Ash. You may know me from Tumblr or you may not know me at all. If that is the case, then sup.
And what Ash Marie did was she was really something that I tried to emulate now, which was kind of the cute girl next door that also does rude and naughty things. So, yes, as said, between the ages of 17 and 18, I did my research. I looked at which camming sites I liked the look of, which seemed easy to use, what exactly I wanted to do when I was on there. And then when I turned 18, I started camming.
So it's been, you did your research and it's been quite a journey that you've gone on. But of course, there would be a lot of people who are quite worried to hear the story of a teenage girl making sex work her career, who might say that it's an exploitative, harmful business. What would you say to that?
I definitely see how some people might view that as you said, a young girl finding pornography and deciding to make that her career. For me, it came across to me as something that I would really enjoy doing. And within being a sex worker, I've had to be my own manager, my own promoter, graphic designer. So there are so many jobs within one. And I have had normal jobs in the past. I've been a cleaner and I've worked in retail, but it never really fit right with me. I work when I want. I make as much money as I want to, depending on how hard I work, usually. But unfortunately, that's not the case for everybody. And I do understand that there can be a sort of grey area for people that are outside of the industry looking in, seeing somebody who doesn't really want to do this job but has to make money.
So tell me about when you first came across OnlyFans.
When I first came across OnlyFans, I actually already had my own website built. But unfortunately, I was using the payment processor Stripe and they decided to stop adult content payment processing. So I didn't have a website anymore. And my friend said that she was on OnlyFans and I could use her referral link so that she would make 5% of my earnings. And that sounded really good. So I joined OnlyFans.
And am I right in understanding that financially the cut was super appealing? Creators got 80% and OnlyFans took 20%, which isn't common, is it, across
the internet? In the early days of camming and online sex work, it was very common for the websites to take a 50% cut. So when OnlyFans came along and it was 80-20, naturally we all jumped on it. That sounds incredible. 80%? Yes, I will take 80% of my own earnings, please. Thank you.
And you've talked about how before you did some modelling, glamour modelling, webcamming. How do you look back on that now?
I think what I do now is 100% safer. When I did first start modelling, for each shoot that I would go on, I would send the details of the photographer to a friend or my mum when I first started and let her know the exact times that I planned on being there to and from and what I would be doing. And if she didn't hear from me by this time, to worry. So I think my earliest years of modelling and starting in the sex industry, it's quite dangerous looking back at it. But now that I am more or less strictly online, especially because of the pandemic, most sex workers have had to go online. It's so much safer because if I don't like the sound of whoever is buying my content, I can just block them.
How often does that happen?
I will every so often, in a blue moon, have somebody that's been subscribed for a while really start pushing me for content that's stuff that I don't do, like open leg stuff that they know I don't create. But it will start to sound a little bit more like, oh, well, I've been subscribed to you for a really long time and I've spent a lot of money, so do you not think that I deserve it? And I am very swift with blocking and banning and letting my other fans know what they did that got them a block.
Alex, as far as most people are concerned, OnlyFans is a sex website. But not that long ago, you had the likes of Cardi B and Disney actress Bella Thorne just jumping on that bandwagon and making millions of dollars out of it. And if I look at OnlyFans' homepage now, I see a chef.
All right, so wait until the noodles are nice and bouncy. Or
next to a video of a yoga instructor.
Hey everyone, welcome to Yoga with Taz. Today we're going to be doing some juicy hip opening stretches.
Which is next to a country and western singer.
If you want to be a part of my world, where else do you combine some R&B, some country music, some sexiness on no other person's page other than K. Michelle? Maybe I
should walk away. What is going on?
I think, again, some of it comes back to this idea of how cynical do we want to be? And starting with the non-cynical view of it. The non-cynical view is that OnlyFans is a site that has porn performers but has an infrastructure that can be used for a lot more. The desire to crassly monetize your fans, another way of putting it perhaps, is to make money from the work of posting. That desire is now quite widespread across the internet. OnlyFans is not the only company that operates in this space. You know, Twitter just launched the concept of super follows. They're beta testing it right now, but Twitter will let you, as a power user, charge people between $3 and $10 a month to access a special feed of tweets only for super followers.
Oh my God.
YouTube will let you send money directly to the person you're viewing and use that money to highlight your comments in the chat of a live stream. If you do want to be able to post extra content for paying followers only, OnlyFans is a system that lets you do that. Sex sells, and associating yourself with sex is quite frequently a very good branding move. And already that sounds a bit cynical, but that is still the non-cynical narrative here. Mm. The cynical narrative is that this is all about money and this is directed from the top by OnlyFans. This is OnlyFans building a porn website, making billions of quid from it, and deciding that the only way to get bigger is to leave porn behind. Porn is a tricky industry. It is an industry where banks will drop you. It's an industry where people will use hacked credit cards to pay for your stuff. It's an industry where people will use chargebacks to try and defraud you out of what you just paid them for. All of that gives quite an incentive to maybe not leave it behind, but grow beyond it.
All of that culminated in this moment last month, which caused a massive uproar.
A content creation platform called OnlyFans is changing its policy toward explicit content, and that's rattling the online sex work industry. The platform says it will ban pornographic content starting in October.
OnlyFans announced a ban on all explicit adult content from the site starting on the 1st of October. First of all, why did they do that?
They now say that they said that because of pressure from their payment partners. The company says, Tim Stokely has said in interviews, that multiple banks had over the years played hardball with OnlyFans, that Metro Bank in the UK had pulled its account entirely, that Bank of America Merrill Lynch in the US had started flagging every single payment that OnlyFans sent to creators, effectively preventing the company from being able to pay out money that wasn't even its to hold to, right, to the people who've been posting on the site. That is probably true. As I've said, payments and porn mix badly. All of that means that banks have been uneasy dealing with porn in general. And OnlyFans says that this summer it reached a head and the company decided to tighten its explicit imagery policy. It never quite banned adult content entirely. Its announcement was that it was going to be banning sexually explicit imagery. And there were questions over how tightly drawn that would be. But either way, it was a tight redrawing of the boundaries of what was acceptable on the site. That is what OnlyFans say.
Right.
The theory from sex workers who felt betrayed by the site is that that was a convenient cover for these clearly articulated long-term goals to move away from porn. Even before OnlyFans announced this change in policy, OnlyFans had launched OnlyFans TV, a app for smart TVs and smartphones that let you watch exclusively safe for work clips from the OnlyFans broader network.
Hi guys, it's Olivia Knight here at Chess with Olivia on OnlyFans and Chess with Olivia on OFTV. So what you could do is bishop takes bishop, bishop takes rook. I don't know why I couldn't think of that.
This was not a company that was giving the impression that doubling down on porn was in its corporate future. This was a company that was giving the impression that, banks or not, it wanted more clean content on its site and less adult content.
So B, when OnlyFans made this decision, it said it was doing it to ensure the long-term sustainability of the platform and to continue to host an inclusive community. What did you think when you saw that?
Well, I'm not allowed to swear on this podcast, but I thought it was absolute bull. Sex workers tend to get onto a platform and then market phenomenally. We bring people over, we make it huge, we build them up, and then they kick us off. And it happens so, so often. Veterans of the industry will have seen this coming a mile off, as I did. But it was just, it's just such a shame that we finally had this little platform that was getting mainstream recognition and being able to say, oh, I do OnlyFans as a job, and people understand straight away what it is that you do, was fantastic. And it just sort of got ripped away, which sucked.
Following that very loud reaction, there did seem to be a U-turn.
Let's check in on a story that we have been following this week. OnlyFans doing a total 180, scrapping plans to ban sexually explicit material. After coming to a resolution with its bank partners, the decision coming less than a week after its original announcement that the platform would be banning explicit content, and it received plenty of pushback from content creators.
OnlyFans said that they would now suspend their decision to ban explicit sexual content. And given that they may still flip again, are you trying to work out if your content would even still be allowed on OnlyFans?
Well, as I only do softcore pornography, my content wouldn't necessarily be directly affected by this change. But I want to stand in solidarity with my community, and I don't want to support or give money to a company that is willing to cut off the earnings of so many of my peers. So I'm eventually going to be migrating over to fansly.com, which is another platform that's just started and it's boosting and it seems to be doing really, really well. So yeah, while it may not directly affect me, I want to stand with my peers and not provide OnlyFans with any more of the money that I could bring in.
So you will like eventually be moving off it then?
Yeah, 100%.
So, Alex, to the layperson, it seems like OnlyFans has done phenomenally well. It's so, so successful. It's made so much money. Why would it upend that? And in theory, is there enough money in that model that it seeks for it to work without sex?
Well, this sort of goes back to my wider theory I have about billionaires in general, right? Which is that to be a billionaire, you kind of have to have a fundamental personality disorder, because any normal person who made £100 million would stop working. Why are you still
going?
Don't need
to keep collecting money.
This is the thing, right? And so to a certain extent, like, I agree with you. Once you have a $1 billion business.
Oh, I think my bar's far lower than that.
Yeah,
but go on.
Just stop. You don't need to grow. You're fine. You're done. You can retire. You can pose in weird images that you put on your Instagram of you leaning back in an expensive suit reading the Financial Times, as OnlyFans founder Tim Stokely does. I agree. And yet, I can confirm from having spoken to the business community for a long time that people don't think that way. Apparently, when people make $1 billion, they want to make 10 after that. And so there is that fundamental question of just growth. Like, it grows because the world that we're in means that businesses want to just carry on growing. I think the question for OnlyFans about whether or not there is a stability there, though, is actually a more fundamental one. Because it has this very uneasy relationship with payment processors, I think there is a plausible case to be made that standing still really isn't an option for that company. That if they sit there as only a $1 billion valuation porn website, they are forever at the mercy of one big moral panic cutting off their access to payment providers, or one big investigation that finds child abuse imagery on their site that leads to them being shut down and blocked from huge networks. You know, those are huge risks for them. And I think there's a chance that genuinely the company sat down and went, we need to be what we say we are. We need to be a subscription-based social network because that's the only way we can actually keep the payment providers online. Porn can stick around to a certain extent, but we need to grow the safe work side of our business or the whole business will collapse.
You've just mentioned what might happen if there was an investigation, but there were actually two BBC investigations into OnlyFans. One looked at how under-18s were using the site.
BBC News has investigated concerns that under-18s are using OnlyFans. We've been told some are making thousands of pounds selling explicit images.
And the other one was about some very slack moderation policies. How damaging was that?
The big killer blow for OnlyFans from that investigation was that the BBC found that some guidance given to moderators explicitly included a multiple strike system for illegal content. In other words, OnlyFans was telling its moderators, if someone has posted illegal content to the site, warn them and take down the content, but don't ban their account. That's a pretty bold thing.
Yeah.
Like, illegal content is actually quite rare. There's not much that is illegal to post on the internet. The BBC found some quite major safeguarding failures over child abuse imagery from people who had been posting on OnlyFans while underage themselves to people who had been, you know, underage partners of overage OnlyFans posters who had appeared in footage posted by them to the site. These are not good. Mm. And the BBC's allegation was that OnlyFans was neglectful in this. And a more fundamental problem is that, you know, I do not think it is a clear, settled case in society that this is a valid trade-off. You know, one argument I've heard is basically that the existence of one 15-year-old posting nude pics on OnlyFans is itself not worth the trade-off for the benefit that OnlyFans gives to society, because that benefit is only the ability to post amateur pornography for money on the internet, which many people argue is not much of a benefit. That's a strong anti-porn claim, but it's something that I think needs to be addressed head on rather than calling it censorship, ignoring it and moving on. Because there is evidence of harm.
Coming up, what does the OnlyFans row mean for everyone else on the internet? Ultimately, OnlyFans is a company that's made billions of pounds from the work people like you are doing. And obviously, a few weeks ago, it did look like, well, to critics, that it was just throwing you all under the bus. Some people look at that and say sex workers have always been disposable and they've always been exploited by the rich men who run the industry, and that what's happened with OnlyFans is just yet another example of that. How do you feel about that?
I agree with that statement. I think we are constantly exploited for what we are able to bring to companies. It does get grating when you're having to just flip-flop from different platforms and having to take all my content from one place and put it on another. And it does happen time and time again. Sex workers usually will build up a platform, and then as soon as it's big enough to bring in other people and celebrities, sex workers get kicked off.
Alex, for now, sex workers are still on OnlyFans, but the message has been sent, I mean, arguably by OnlyFans, by the banks, that they aren't totally comfortable with just selling sex in the future. But some of what's going on here isn't just about pornography. What does it tell us about the way the internet works more broadly?
No matter how big you are on the internet, there are always larger players on whom your existence relies. Payment processes, actually, there's quite a lot. It's quite an open market. But if Amazon decides to refuse service to you, you've lost the biggest cloud payments provider. You've lost the biggest cloud host. If Google or Facebook decide to blacklist you, that can kill whole businesses. And I think OnlyFans, it's easy to think about this as a porn story, and it is a porn story. But it's also a story of what happens when, without sort of a vote, or public policy, or a legal change, a powerful company or companies can just decide that they don't want you to exist and that you don't. And I do think that that's bad. I don't like, I've come down on both sides of the big porn debate over right. the course of our conversation. But however that debate is solved, I think it should be solved by a debate and ultimately by sort of elected officials getting involved and passing laws. I don't think it should be solved by a few people quite senior in a few banks just deciding that they want porn to not exist anymore. And then it happens because they have that power. That seems bad to me. That seems like a direction for society that should probably be, you know, considered and stopped.
Alex Hearn, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
That was The Guardian's UK technology editor, Alex Hearn. He's also the writer of The Guardian's new flagship tech newsletter, Techscape, which I very much recommend you checking out. My thanks to Alex and to Bea. I should say, we did approach OnlyFans for comment on this episode, but we haven't had a response yet. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Joshua Kelly. Sound design is by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. One other thing. Yesterday, news broke of a cabinet reshuffle. And if you want to hear the latest on that, do check out our sister podcast, Politics Weekly. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.